It is day three of the Virginia Film Festival. This is Sean McCourt. I am in the festival studio, which is the media center of the Community Idea Stations here on the bustling downtown Charlottesville Mall. And I'm sitting with filmmaker Michelle Jackson. Thank you for coming in this morning. I know your morning was a little harried.
That's all right. I'm pleased to be here.
And your film, Another Slave Narrative, screens very shortly.
At noon, that's
right. At noon at the Jefferson Center, the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center. It is a 38-minute film preceded by a short. And Another Slave Narrative is, well, actually, you tell me how the film came about and what people should expect to see.
Sure. So years ago, I was writing an enslaved narrative for a screenplay, a feature length. Mm-hmm. And so to do some background research on that, I had read a book called When I Was a Slave. And When I Was a Slave is a compilation of some of the Federal Writers Project's federal interviews of formerly enslaved men and women. That project took place from 1936 to 38. And so basically they interviewed men and women who had been enslaved, had been freed, gone through the Civil War, been freed, and by this time were now going through the Depression. Some of the people were as young as 80. The youngest person would be 80 years old. Some of them were as old as 127, 125 or so, right? And so reading these narratives, and they're in the first person, they're the transcripts that we are able to access on the Library of Congress's website. Mm-hmm. So reading these transcripts both on the website and then also in the book, it was compelling because you can see a narrative where someone says, so-and-so knocked on so-and-so's door, Mary Reynolds' door, and said, hey, can we learn about slavery? Tell us about slavery. And they're not prepared for this conversation. And there's a lot of trauma with that conversation. And so you can see in the transcript some resistance into having that conversation. So as I'm reading this, I'm just thinking through, well, one, can you believe what Mary Reynolds had to go through? Can you believe what Willie Moore had to go through? So that's one. I wanted to tell my friends about it. But then also I'm aware in Los Angeles that there's also this perspective of, do we need to keep on talking about slavery? Namely, do we need to do another slave narrative? And so I was compelled to do two things. One, to tell my friends, but then also to keep quiet. And I thought, well, I'm just going to try to tell everybody at this point then. And so wanting to honor these people and let people know who they were, and that they mattered, and that they counted, I just decided to do a film, and I have lots of colleagues in Los Angeles who are actors who would be willing to do this sort of project.
So just for some slightly additional historical context, the Federal Writers Project came out of the Roosevelt Works Progress Administration.
Uh-huh. That's right.
And they were trying to document lives of people all across America. The Alan Lomax recordings came out of that same initiative. So in 1936, 1938, they had the opportunity to talk to people who had been born and raised as slaves freed. These were firsthand, real-life experiences of people now in their 80s and hundreds.
That's right.
Which is amazing.
Right.
So when you brought the... When you got your actors, when you got your cast of people, how did they react when they first saw these, and how did you select which voices would depict which narratives?
So two things. One, because I'm working on a low $0 budget, I had to be really intentional about who I could ask because not everybody wants to work on a $0 budget. And so that's one. So I didn't want to come to my friends and colleagues to say, can you please memorize 5 pages worth of narration.
Right.
And so, but what I could do is say, hey friends, can you memorize 1/3 of narration of a transcript? And so then I decided, well, why don't I just have 8 people portray themselves as one person as opposed to having one person portray themselves as one person, just so I could lessen the load a little bit for the actor who it's time I respected. So then that's one. But then I initially reached out to black actors that I knew, and then I had one colleague in particular who was really reluctant to do that, and she had at the time was on Being Mary Jane, and she had said that she was tired of playing a slave, that at the time most of the auditions she was getting related to being an enslaved person. And she said that's fine, but that's also really difficult. It's really traumatic that if you're going to have real integrity, and if perhaps if you're a method actor, you're really going to go back into your own past of what kind of trauma you've got to elicit for a role. She said, it just takes weeks to come back from that, and I'm tired of it, so I'm just going to think that through. And so because she was thinking, she was informing me about that reluctance and the trauma that she has to go through as a black actress over and over again, I then thought, well, then why does it have to only be black actors who have to go through the trauma of telling these stories? There are good things that we can talk about in these narratives. There's a lot of pain. And are there other colleagues that we have who care about these stories, who are not used to telling these stories, that can also help bear some of the responsibility in telling these stories? And so I reached out to my friends who were Jewish, my friends who were Chinese American, my friends who were Indian, and my friends who came from different walks of life who didn't necessarily have enslaved narratives in their DNA. And then they said, okay, yeah, it was pretty easy. I was surprised on how quickly people responded and said, you know, whatever I can do to be helpful, I'm down for it.
Hmm. Now, you said in L.A. that part of the reason for your title, Another Slave Narrative, was because you were met with some resistance when you wanted to tell the story. So was there a feeling that these stories had been told enough?
Sure. And so what I will say is that I taught a class at UVA on Thursday for Dr. Goins' history and media class, and we talked a little bit about this. And I showed a clip before, during the class, of Snoop Dogg, who on Instagram was pretty explicit about saying, you know, he's so tired of hearing about 12 Years a Slave or Underground or whatever other TV or film show that's coming out regarding slavery. From his perspective, as Snoop Dogg's perspective, can we move on? Is that the only thing that we can talk about, that we have done so many more things since then? Can we celebrate that instead of just celebrating the fact that we were oppressed and that we were bound up and that we came here against our will? And again, I should say that I come from, these are the people that I come from. And so I can sympathize with that perspective. But I come to Virginia. I'm not from Virginia, but I come from Virginia because James Jackson Sr. was an slave owner, and he bought a woman who was born in Africa, who he bought in Virginia, and then five men later, here I am, because I have all my fathers came from them. And so when I'm in Virginia, I think about this woman whose name we don't know, and I think about what it means to be unwilling to talk about her, unwilling to celebrate who she was and who she couldn't be. And so I, as a person who comes from these people, feel an obligation to keep on telling these stories. So I'm not particularly sympathetic to the unwillingness to continue to talk about it. Are there other stories we can tell? Of course. But there are a group of individuals that I'm really proud of that I think that we should keep on talking about and celebrating and letting people know that Fannie Moore existed, or Mary Reynolds existed, and I'm not ashamed of them. I'm ashamed of what they went through, but I'm not ashamed of the lives that they lived and that they managed to live to 105 years old, and most of us are not going to get to that age.
Yeah. So the film we're talking about is Another Slave Narrative, screens today, Saturday, at noon, so shortly, at the Jefferson School. And I think you'll find, I hope you'll find, there'll be discussion after the screening, that here in Charlottesville, our own way of talking about slavery has changed just since August of last year. This town, you know, where this nice little liberal progressive town built on a foundation of slavery, you know, and our town founders were slaveholders. And we kind of discussed that. We've had a history of discussing that in a very academic sense. Yes, this is who these men were, but they were products of their time, and we're better than that now. And I think when we had the Band-Aid ripped off in August of last year, we're still healing, and I think one of the ways that we're healing is we're having these conversations. So have you been... Once you got out of Los Angeles, have you been bringing this film to other parts of the country? And what kind of conversations have you been hearing?
Well, the first place that it screened was at the African American Women in Cinema Film Festival last year in New York. And it got first place, so it did pretty well there, which is great. I have certainly screened it in faith-based communities as well. So we've had some conversations. I'm a confirmed Episcopalian as of this year, as of April. So I'm a part of St. John's Episcopal Cathedral in Los Angeles. And so the Episcopal Church has been trying to reckon their own sense of participation in slavery. And so it's been a privilege to be able to, again, show this film and start the conversation about what it means to be faith-based individuals and still have willing individuals who are enslavers as well. Namely, that Christianity came through to black people through enslavers. So that's interesting in itself.
Yeah.
And so I think that the perspective has been, or the feedback has been positive. I think if you look on YouTube comments that I've since muted, because I think it's not necessarily the space to be so mean, is that the response to having a multiracial cast is not so helpful. That
really?
There are black, at least from the YouTube comments that I've seen, that black individuals who have heard about this, namely that you have white people portraying themselves as slaves, and that's sort of the log line, that is offensive, and I understand why that can be offensive. And so that is not something that's been embraced by a certain number of individuals who've been pretty vocal about that on YouTube. Again, I muted those comments because that's not fair to Fannie Moore, Mary Reynolds, and the people that we're trying to celebrate. We don't need to hear them or their stories to be denigrated in that way. And so it's been interesting to see that one person who brought me aside after a screening and after watching the film had said that he was a Chinese-American individual, and he had said that he didn't feel so much sympathy watching these narratives until one of our white actresses was on the screen. And the interesting thing, again, is that you've got six people telling the exact same story, reading the exact same transcript, and so there's nothing changing except the person on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I didn't feel sympathy until I saw her, and that's a problem for me. And I'm aware of that now, that that's a problem for me, that I didn't sympathize until I saw white faces show up. And so I think what's been really helpful is for people to be aware of where their internal, maybe implicit bias comes from. Why do we care about that story and we don't care about that story? My hope is that with this film, that there are individuals who may have been able to say, that's a black issue, and they'll move on, they'll deal with their thing. When they see people that look like them, that they might be more inclined to say, maybe this isn't just about black people. Maybe it is about an American story. Maybe it's about our American history and how we have collectively in this country played some part into hurting others, oppressing others. And so we'll see today.
Do you hope that your film will be part of a larger conversation across the country? And do you think that we as a nation and culture are ready to have it, or?
I think my hope is that it could be.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly, there are many professors who teach on these interviews. There's a professor, Adam Rothman at Georgetown, has certainly incorporated this into his curriculum as well. And so, particularly at the academic level, I think there have been professors who really embrace that, and I'm excited about that and feel honored to be a part of that conversation. I hope that we are getting ready for that conversation. I think politically, this country is in a really interesting bind right now, and I don't know how this film will contribute to that. But again, my hope has always been in not necessarily to change anyone's mind about slavery, but simply to say, this is somebody that mattered. You know, we talk about slavery a lot of times in terms of numbers, millions of people. And then we see these photographs and we think, I don't know who that is, but that was just somebody who suffered. But it wasn't somebody. It was Mary Reynolds, it was Fannie Moore, it was Louis Jenkins, and on, everybody had a name. And so I want, my hope when people see this is just to see that this was not some broad tragedy, that it had individual trauma on individuals, and some of our families are still suffering from that. And it's really special to be able to hear these individuals at 105 years old talk about what it meant to be enslaved at 5 and to still have that trauma and not get any therapy or any PTSD training after that. That's what they had to deal with. So anyway, my hope is that people just are aware that individuals were impacted, and if you can just hear their story for 37 minutes and 10 seconds or 38 minutes or whatever it is, I don't know how it's going to impact your day, but I just wanted you to know that there are some really special people out there that had a name and mattered.
You mentioned that you taught at a, you were a guest in a class yesterday at UVA, and apparently you've gone to some other classes and other schools. So are you, are young people, the college age people, are they having this conversation? Are they seeing these things differently? What I'm asking is, do we have hope?
I'm hopeful. So the class that I went to, history of media class on Thursday, was a predominantly white class, and there are two black females I can recall, and they seem to be interested in having this conversation, albeit reluctant, because I think, particularly in Charlottesville, there is a desire to not want to say the wrong thing, to not want to be then tweeted out or Instagrammed out or whatever people are doing right now into, as a quotation that they can be held accountable to, you know, 10 years later or so. So I think there is some reticence there. But I do, I when I interact with young people, particularly in Los Angeles, I'm hopeful that things are going to be are changing and that there is a willingness to be more inclusive of everybody. So I don't know. The only way that you can know is when people are really honest, and I think that there is some reticence to be really honest about what people think. But even one student who I was pleased to talk with him afterwards, he gave me some pushback on some of the things that I said, and I said, look, here's my card, man, if you want to have a conversation, let's have it, because here is what informs my opinion, and let's hear what informs your opinion, and let's really start asking some honest questions of each other about why we come to these conclusions. And I think that's what's really helpful, is to just be honest and transparent. And I should say that Another Slave Narrative, the screening, is sold out, and I don't know who's going to show up, but I'm really hopeful that it'll be a multiracial audience that can have some honest conversations.
I hope so too. The that screening, Another Slave Narrative, is at noon very shortly, so you're going to be dashing out of here. So everybody should come see the film. It's at noon at the Jefferson Center, but if they miss it or they want to keep following you, it's a film on social media. You have your website. How do people continue to get information about Another Slave Narrative?
Thank you. So I tried to make it very easy. The website is anotherslavenarrative.com, so that's
perfect.
One. The Huffington Post wrote an article on it as well last year, and so if you Google Huffington Post, Another Slave Narrative, the article is there, and then also their film is also embedded at the top of that article, as well as Black Nerd Girls also wrote an article on it as well, so that's that. And then my hope is there's 2,300 interviews, and so my hope is that I've done six, that I'll keep on doing it in perpetuity. And so I'm looking forward to doing the next installment very shortly.
Thank you very much, Michelle. My guest is Michelle Jackson, filmmaker, director of Another Slave Narrative, which, again, screens today, noon at the Jefferson Center. This podcast and all others will be available on cevillepodcast.com or on the festival website at virginiafilmfestival.org/podcast. I'm Sean McCord. Look forward to seeing you back here.